all. An older woman bustled in. I'm his mother. What's this? She said, taking in the handcuffs.
It's about the toilet paper, someone said.
Oh, for goodness sakes, Mrs. Pickerall said. It was toilet paper, and it wasn't even any good.
Besides, it's his life's work, a woman said. He's a crusader. He's like Robin Hood. Yeah, everyone murmured, Robin Hood.
He still has to keep his court date, I told them. There's no court tonight, Mrs. Pickerall said, and I need him to give me a ride home. I'll make sure he goes tomorrow morning.
I heard this a lot. No one ever showed up in the morning.
Look at him, Mrs. Pickerall said. Does he look like a criminal?
My nose was running, and my eyes were feeling puffy from the flowers, and I was caring less and less about Lenny Pickerall and his stupid toilet paper crime spree. Fine, I said, unlocking the cuffs. I'm letting him go, but I'm holding all of you responsible. If Lenny doesn't show up at court tomorrow morning to get rebonded, you'll all be accessories to a crime. That was a crock of duty, but I felt like I had to say something. And it was at that instant that God rewarded me for showing compassion and letting Lenny walk. Or maybe it was the bottle that was back in my bag that brought me luck. I turned from Lenny, and from the corner of my eye I caught a glimpse of a head sticking up above the mourning masses. It was Butch Goody. Lenny's capture fee would have bought me a meatball sub. Goody's capture fee would pay my rent, and then some. Goody was up by the casket paying condolences to the family. I hugged the wall, coming at him from the rear. I had no clue how to take him down. I didn't have a stun gun or pepper spray. I wasn't about to shoot him. Even if I could get the cuffs on him, I didn't think I could stop him from fleeing. I stood to one side and waited for him to move from the casket area. Yo, I said, stepping in front of him. How's it going? His expression was blank for a moment while he connected the dots, and then recognition slammed into him.
You again,
he said, wheeling around, looking for an exit, fixing on the door to the lobby. Wait, I said, grabbing the back of his jacket. We need to talk. We can deal.
I'm not going to jail,
he said, and he took off for the door. I still had my fingers wrapped into his jacket, and I held tight, trying to slow him down with my weight, not having any luck with it. He was knocking people over, pushing them aside, muscling his way to the lobby. Grandma was just inside the open double door, standing beside the cookie station.
Hey, she said to Butch, what the heck's going on with you and my granddaughter?
Get out of my way, Butch said.
That's no way to talk to an old lady, Grandma said,
and she whacked Butch in the shins with her crutch.
Oh,
Butch said, stopping just long enough for me to bash him in the gonads with my purse. Butch sucked air, went down to his knees, and doubled over. I rushed at him with flexi-cuffs and bound his ankles, twice.
Boy, Grandma said, you pack a wallop with that purse. What have you got in it?
Uncle Pip's lucky bottle. Now I had Butch rolling around on the floor of the funeral parlor. I sort of had him captured, but I had no way to get him into my car. I couldn't drag him, and he couldn't walk with his ankles bound. If I cuffed his hands and released the shackles on his ankles, he'd run away. I need help getting him to my car, I said to the crowd of people clustered around us. Everyone shuffled their feet. No one volunteered.
For goodness sakes, I said, this man is a felon.
The funeral director, Milton Shreebush, rushed over.
Holy cats, he said, looking down at Butch. He's FDA, Grandma said. My granddaughter just made a bond enforcement maneuver.
I see that, Milton said, but he can't stay on the floor like this.
Then help me drag him to my car, I told him. Milton reached for Butch, and Butch growled and grabbed him. Milton slapped at Butch, and they rolled around, locked together.
Help, Milton yelled. Get the police, somebody do something.
I stepped in and hit Butch in the head with my purse. Butch shook his head, stunned, and Milton scrambled away.
That didn't work so good, Grandma said.
Butch was crabbing around, waving his arms, trying to grab people, and everyone was keeping distance. I figured my choices were hit him with a bottle and knock him out, call the police, call Range Man, or let him go. I decided to go with Range Man. It took Range Man 5 minutes to respond to my call for help. Two big guys wearing Range Man black uniforms and full utility belts calmly walked up to Butch and looked at him. Butch was still on the floor, sweating and snarling and spitting and making threatening grabbing motions. One of the men gave Butch a bunch of bolts with a stun gun. The rangeman guy didn't move fast enough, and Butch grabbed the gun and threw it across the room. "Huh," the rangeman guy said. "Yeah," I said. "Been there, done that. Are you sure he's human?" "Maybe you could hook a chain to the flexi-cuffs on his ankles and drag him behind your car," I said.
"We tried that once and Ranger didn't like it," the guy said. "You do something twice the Ranger doesn't like and you're out of a job and damaged."
"We need to clear the area," the other guy said. "Get rid of the audience."
Most of the gawkers had gotten bored and moved on, and I was able to persuade the few remaining to think about refreshments. I was guiding them to the cookie table, and I heard a sound like a baseball bat hitting a sack of sand. Thwack! I turned and saw that Butch was sleeping. "Is he okay?" I asked them.
"Yeah," the rangeman guy said. "He'll be fine. He just had to calm down. Would you like us to deliver him to the police station for you?"
"Yes, that would be great," I said. They cuffed Butch's massive hands behind his back and dragged him away.
"They seem like nice young men," Grandma said.
I took Grandma home and called Ranger. "Have you got a minute?" I asked him.
"As many as you need."
I drove to the center of the city, turned onto Ranger Street, and parked in the rangeman garage. I took the elevator to the 7th floor and pressed the intercom button next to Ranger's door. I could have just gone in. I had a key. But I thought that might send the wrong message. Ranger opened his door and looked me over.
"Pretty."
"Thank you. I was at a viewing."
"I heard."
He was still dressed from work. Black t-shirt, black cargo pants, black running shoes. 5 o'clock shadow. His apartment was always cool and pristine. Subdued lighting in the hall. Fresh flowers on the narrow hall table. All the work of his housekeeper. I followed him to the kitchen, and he poured me a glass of red wine. His kitchen was small but state-of-the-art. Stainless steel and black granite.
"What are the minutes about?" he asked. "Is this visit personal or business?"
"Business." I sipped the wine.
"Nice," I said.
Morelli would have offered me a beer. Ranger always offered me wine I couldn't afford to buy. Ranger knew the value of temptation and bribery. Ranger leaned against the kitchen counter, arms crossed over his chest.
"I'm guessing this is about Vinny."
"We managed to raise the money to buy back his debt, and we were all at the office, and the president of Wellington called and said he wanted to talk to Vinny."
"This was today?"
"Yes, this afternoon. So Vinny and I went to Wellington. The offices are in the Meegan building, and the offices were empty. The president, Roger Drager, was there, and a couple guys in suits playing online solitaire, and a kid working a giant paper shredder. Drager said the company was on flex hours, but the cubicles and offices didn't look used to me. No clutter, nothing in wastebaskets. And Drager was nervous. His hands were sweaty."
"What did he want?"
"Money. He knew about the phony bonds, and he wanted his money back."
"He didn't shut Vinny down? Didn't go to the police?"
"No. Vinny said the setup looked fishy, like it was a shell company. He was worried he was scamming someone who was an even bigger scammer."
"That's not good," Ranger said.
"It gets worse. We got back to the office and three goons came in and tried to snatch Vinny at gunpoint. One of them shot Lula, but it just nicked her. And then Connie shot one of them in the knee and they left."
Ranger smiled.
"Connie's probably been shooting men in the knee since she was 12.
"So what do you think about Wellington?"
"I think I wouldn't want to work for them."
"Should I go to Morelli?"
"Only if you want second best," Ranger said.
"I'm talking about police action." Ranger took my wine from me, tasted it, and set it on the counter.
"Let's look in on Wellington."
"Now?"
"Yes."
I followed him through his living room into his bedroom.
"The building will be empty," Ranger said, moving into his dressing room. "The cleaning crew should be gone by now."
"What about the alarm?"
"Rangeman installed the security system in the Meegan building."
Chapter 24. Ranger's bedroom was masculine luxury. Dark woods, ivory walls, tans and browns, king-sized bed with expensive Italian linens. There was a large bath en suite and a walk-in dressing room as big as my bedroom. He opened a drawer in the built-in dresser, removed a utility belt, and buckled it on. He selected a gun from another drawer. Handcuffs, stun gun, defense spray. He handed me a penlight and took one for himself.
He shrugged into a windbreaker with the Rangeman logo clearly visible. He selected a second Rangeman jacket and handed it to me.
Swap your sweater out for this. If someone sees us, I can say we're doing a security check.
We rode the elevator to the garage where Ranger chose a fleet SUV. The Megan building was only blocks away. Easy to find on-street parking at this time of the night. We parked directly in front of the door. Ranger used his fob to enter the building and to defuse the alarm. No need for the pen light. The lobby was dimly lit, as were the halls and elevator. Fifth floor, I told Ranger. We entered the elevator. He pushed the button and looked over at me.
You're very calm, he said.
It's easy to be calm when I'm with you. I feel protected.
I try, Ranger said. You don't always cooperate.
The doors opened, and we walked the hall to Wellington's door. Ranger fobbed it open. We stepped inside and closed the door behind us. The interior room was pitch black. No path lighting. The outside offices showed ambient light, but not enough to guide me. Ranger clicked his pen light on.
Let's try to use just the one light, he said. Hang on to me if you can't see.
I curled my hand into the back of his cargo pants just above his gun belt. I'm good to go. He was still for a beat.
You could have held on to my jacket, he said.
Would you rather I do that?
No, not even a little.
He flicked the light over the cubicles and into the offices. He stopped and opened a file cabinet. Empty.
You were right, he said. None of this is being used. Where's Draeger's office?
There's a hall at the end of this room. His office is at the end of the hall. Ranger flicked the light at the shredder room door.
What's in here?
Paper shredder.
And this one?
It's an office. Draeger said he had a meeting. He went into this office and we let ourselves out. Ranger opened the door and flashed the light around. It was a boardroom. Large oval table. Chairs pulled up to the table, unoccupied at the moment. We continued down the hall to Draeger's office. The door was ajar, and Ranger stopped before entering. He knew what he was going to find inside. I did too. We could smell it. Decomposing body. It doesn't take long after death. The body evacuates, blood pools, the smell is unmistakable.
Wait here, Ranger said.
It's okay, I told him. I can deal. Draeger was on the floor by his desk, probably fell out of his chair. Bullet to the back of his head, execution style, like Kulik and Dunn. Ranger pulled on disposable gloves and methodically went through the file cabinets.
I'm not finding anything here, he said. This office has been stripped.
He moved to the credenza.
Uh-oh, he said when he opened the top drawer.
What uh-oh? I hate uh-oh.
Leave the room.
Excuse me?
Explosives, Ranger said, on a timer and a tripwire. If I'd open the drawer another half inch, your hamster would be an orphan.
How much time do we have?
7 minutes.
Shit! I turned and tripped over Draeger's briefcase.
Take it, Ranger said, grabbing my hand, yanking me forward into the hall.
We ran flat out down the hall and through the room with the cubicles. We burst out the door and ran to the elevator. Ranger had it on hold. It was still at our floor. We jumped into the elevator, and Ranger hit the button for the ground floor. How much time do we have? I asked him.
4 minutes, he said. Plenty of time.
We exited the elevator into the lobby, crossed the lobby, and left the building. Ranger reset the alarm with the fob, and we got into the SUV.
2 minutes, Ranger said, pulling away from the curb.
The fifth floor windows blew out when we reached the corner. Ranger hooked a U-turn and parked so we could watch the building. There was a second explosion. The alarm was wailing away, and fire spilled out the open windows. Ranger called his control room.
Tell all responders to the Megan building alarm to secure the exterior of the building. Under no circumstances are they to go inside until the fire marshal declares the building safe.
Two Rangeman SUVs arrived and parked half a block from the burning building. A police car was simultaneously on the scene. Ranger made another U-turn and drove back to Rangeman. He parked in the garage and looked over at me.
You can really haul ass in those heels, he said. The memory will give me sleepless nights for a long time.
That got a smile out of me. Sorry to interfere with your sleep.
There's a solution to the problem, Ranger said, getting out of the car. You can finish your wine upstairs, and we can discuss it.
He opened the passenger side door, took the briefcase from me, and grinned.
Babe, you have panic written all over your face.
You're a dilemma. He ushered me into the elevator.
Good to know.
We rode in silence to Ranger's floor. He opened his door, and I went to the kitchen and retrieved my wine.
I would have liked more time at Wellington, Ranger said.
He dropped his jacket and gun belt onto the kitchen counter, poured a glass of wine for himself, and refreshed mine. They were shredding bags of papers when I was there with Vinny. Probably there wasn't anything left to see. Ranger took his wine into the dining room and dumped the contents of Drager's briefcase onto the table.
Bank statements, Ranger said, and a list of businesses owned by the firm.
He leafed through the bank statements.
Looks like a pattern of outgoing wire transfers to a New Jersey LLC called G.B. Zakar, and someone has checked them off on the latest statement.
He took the statement to the combination office and den attached to his bedroom and typed Zakar into his computer.
G.B. Zakar doesn't have a website, he said. Let's go to the Jersey State Business Gateway site.
Ranger worked his way through the site and finally came to a guide for requesting public record information. He gave a credit card number, and information on G.B. Zakar was displayed on the screen.
This is interesting, Ranger said. Do you recognize the name of the registered agent?
Walter Dunn, one of the Wellington lawyers found executed behind the diner.
G.B. Zakar gives a Newark P.O. box as its address, and they list four company officers, Herpes Zoster, Mickey Mouskovich, Rainbow Trout, and Gregor Bludovich. I expect the first three names are fake. That leaves Gregor Bludovich, Ranger said.
Bluto? Gritch said he heard Sunflower talk about Bluto. Gritch didn't know if it was a first name, last name, or nickname. I was leaning over the back of Ranger's chair, reading off the computer screen, trying hard not to kiss his neck. It would be absolutely the wrong thing to do, but it was so tempting. He always smelled great, like his Bulgari green shower gel. How it stayed with him all day was a mystery. His black T-shirt spanned his biceps. He wore a watch as his only jewelry. His back looked athletic under his shirt. I thought it would look even better without the shirt. All I had to do was touch my lips to his neck, and the shirt would be gone.
Babe, Ranger said, if you don't back up a couple inches, we're going to be finding out about Bludovich in the morning.
I didn't move. I was contemplating.
Babe?
I stepped away from his chair. I was reading the screen. Let's see what you can pull up on Bluto. Ranger had state-of-the-art computer programs that left most people with virtually no secrets. He could get medical records, credit histories, shoe size, litigation, you name it. Ranger plugged Gregor Bludovich into one of the programs, and information scrolled up.
52 years old, Ranger said. Born in Varna, Bulgaria. Came to this country in 92. He has four ex-wives and is currently unmarried. He has seven kids distributed among his ex-wives. His oldest is 34. The youngest is 6. He was a police officer in Varna for 15 years. No work history after that. He owns property in Newark and Bucks County. I know the Newark area. It has a large Russian immigrant population. The Bucks County property is in Taylorsville. He's affiliated with three other holding companies. He had a double bypass 2 years ago. He was charged with assault with a deadly weapon last year, but the charges were dropped.
What was the weapon?
A chainsaw. He cut a guy's leg off. He claimed it was an accident.
This is not a nice man.
I have a couple contacts in Newark. See if you can find some crackers and cheese in the kitchen, and I'll make some phone calls.
I went to the kitchen and poured myself another glass of wine. I found some brie and something else that was creamy and herby. I'm sure all bought by his housekeeper, Ella. I put the two cheese wedges on a cutting board with water crackers, apple slices, and fresh strawberries, and brought them in to Ranger, along with a bottle of wine in our glasses. I set everything on Ranger's desk, and I spread brie on a cracker for myself. Ranger took his headset off.
This is nice.
I take no responsibility. Ella had everything prepared. Ranger sliced off some mystery cheese and ate it with an apple slice. No empty calories cracker for Ranger. Ranger was into health.
I talked to two people in Newark, Ranger said. The opinion of both is that Gregor Blutovich is dangerous. Bulgarian mobster, nicknamed Bluto. Large ego, terrible temper,
probably criminally insane. Both contacts use the word psycho to describe Ludovich. He is a mid-sized operation, and he's overextended. Word on the street is that he's eliminating squeamish business partners.
Like Wellington?
Yes.
Where would Vinny fit in this?
Bludovich owns Wellington, so Vinny scammed Bludovich, and it's not healthy to scam Bludovich.
How not healthy?
As not healthy as you can get.
Dead?
Very dead, Ranger said.
What am I supposed to do?
Have another glass of wine.
And then? Ranger's eyes locked onto mine. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were trying to get me drunk, I said to Ranger.
Not drunk, Ranger said, just relaxed and naked.
I was distracted by an icon blinking on his computer screen. Why is the little flame flashing? I asked him.
I'm hardwired to the control room. One of our systems just sent in a fire alert.
He tapped a key, and an address appeared.
Hamilton Avenue, I said. Oh my God, that's the Bond's office.
Ranger put his headset on and talked to the control room, verifying the fire. He took his headset off, swiveled away from his desk, and stood. I suppose this is the end of our romantic moment, I said to him.
It's okay, he said. You'll have a lot more opportunities for romantic moments.
He closed the space between us and kissed me. Our tongues touched, and I pressed against him.
It's only a fire, I whispered.
He paused for a beat.
You've seen one, you've seen them all, he said,
and he stripped my white stretchy shirt off. He kissed me again, and when he broke from the kiss, my eyes inadvertently strayed to the computer screen.
Babe?
I can't help it. All those blinking things on your computer are distracting. He reached over, hit a key, and the screen went black. I know they're there, I said. Ranger tugged my shirt back over my head and smoothed it down.
I'm good, and I'm motivated, but I know enough not to try to please a woman who's distracted.
He kissed me lightly on the lips and pointed me toward the kitchen.
You owe me.
I grabbed my purse and black cardigan, and Ranger buckled his gun belt back on. We rode the elevator to the garage and took my Mercedes SUV with Ranger driving.
This car smells like fried chicken, Ranger said, and something else that isn't good.
Connie Stink Bomb, I told him. Chapter 25. Ranger turned onto Hamilton, and I could see the glow from the fire. My breath caught in my chest, and my eyes filled with tears.
Call Connie and Lula and Vinny and make sure they're okay, Ranger said.
I dialed Connie first. She answered on the second ring, and I breathed a little easier. I told her about the fire and told her to stay home until I got back in touch. I called Lula next. She was home as well. I called my apartment twice before Vinny picked up.
I didn't know if I was supposed to answer your phone, Vinny said.
I wanted to make sure you were okay. The Bond's office is on fire.
Crap, Vinny said. I'll be right there.
No, I just got here with Ranger. We'll handle it. I don't want you to leave the apartment.
How bad is it?
It's bad. I'll call you back when I know more. Ranger parked a block away, and it was difficult to see much of anything other than billowing smoke and flames shooting into the black sky. The street was clogged with fire trucks, EMTs, and police cars. Men shouted instructions. They were already getting water to the fire, but the closer we got, the more it became apparent that nothing was going to be saved. There was a series of small explosions, and everyone pulled back.
Ammo, Ranger said.
Thank goodness we had the yard sale, I thought. The ammo that was left was minimal, and the dynamite had all gotten cleared out. The explosion stopped, and the firefighters moved closer. They were concentrating on containment and minimizing the damage to adjoining properties.
This is out of control, Ranger said. We're going to have to do something about Bludovich.
Like what?
Short term, we need to encourage him to forget Vinny. Long term, we need to neutralize him. Provide law enforcement with a reason to put Bludovich away for a very long time.
Ranger's attention shifted off me. I turned to see what caught his eye and spotted Morelli walking toward us.
There's no need for you to stay to the end here, Ranger said. Let Morelli follow you home just in case Bluto's watching. I'll stay to talk to the fire marshal.
You don't have to stay, I said.
It's my job, Ranger said. Rangeman manages security on the Bond's office.
Morelli ambled over.
He nodded to Ranger as Ranger walked off to find the fire marshal and gave me a tight smile.
Are you okay?
He asked me. Yes, I said. The fire trucks were already here when I arrived.
That's a relief,
Morelli said.
I was half afraid you and Lula started the fire.
He looked around.
It wasn't Lula, was it?
No, I said. I checked. Morelli looked me over.
That's your viewing uniform.
Yes, and the heels are killing me. I'm ready to go home. Would you mind following me? Ranger thinks I need an escort. I detoured around the fire, and 20 minutes later I rolled into my apartment parking lot with Morelli on my bumper. We got out of our cars, and Morelli walked me into the building. I took my shoes off and pushed the elevator button.
Probably I should walk you all the way to your door,
Morelli said.
Maybe I should even go inside and check under your bed for monsters.
The elevator doors opened, and Vinny was standing there wearing my panties.
Going up?
He asked. Morelli's jaw dropped.
What the hell?
I got locked out, Vinny said. I went downstairs to do my laundry, and when I got back to the apartment, the door was closed shut.
Those are my panties, I said. Vinny looked down at himself.
I figured you wouldn't want me running around naked. All my clothes are in the washer.
And you decided panties were the way to go? I asked.
It was the only thing to fit. They got elastic.
Lucille kicked him out and he didn't have any place to stay, I told Morelli. Morelli grinned at me.
I've seen you in those panties, and they look a lot better when you wear them.
How's the bond's office? Vinny wanted to know.
Burned to the ground, I said.
Oh, jeez, Vinny said. Crap, shit, damn!
He punched the elevator wall and stamped his foot.
This isn't a good picture,
Morelli said. Yeah, and I don't want the underwear back either, I said.
Maybe you should come home with me and let Vinny have the apartment to himself,
Morelli said. I bit into my lower lip. I left Vinny alone in my apartment for a few hours, and he was wearing my panties when I came home. I got stomach cramps thinking about what might happen if I left him overnight. That's probably not a good idea, I said to Morelli. I can't afford to throw away any more underwear.
Understood. I hate to leave you on a sinking ship, but I don't know what more I can do here unless you want me to arrest him for indecent exposure,
Morelli said. He grabbed me and kissed me, moved me back 2 steps into the elevator, and pushed the button for the second floor.
Let me know when he leaves. We can go shopping and replace the underwear with something really skimpy.
Vinny and I got off at the second floor, and I led us into my apartment. You can't walk around like that, I said to Vinny. You're freaking me out. I rummaged through my closet and came up with an old robe.
I saw that, Vinny said, but I didn't think I'd look good in it.
Have you seen yourself in the panties? It's why people go blind. Not only don't they fit, but you're all lumpy. It's a hideous sight.
Cripes, Vinny said. Just tell me how you feel.
I held the robe out to him. Vinny put the robe on and got a beer out of the fridge.
I bet that fire was awesome.
Without a doubt.
Drager is going to be pissed. Has anybody called him? Do you think I should call?
I went dead still for a moment, thinking about Drager's lifeless body lying on his office floor. And then the explosion that had to have obliterated not only all evidence of the Wellington Company, but also of Drager. I imagine Rangeman will get in touch with Wellington, I said. I don't think it's necessary for you to call.
I feel like an orphan, Vinny said. I haven't got Lucille, and I haven't got my office. I haven't even got my own underwear.
I know he made all his own problems, but I felt sorry for him anyway. Get another beer, and we'll see if we can find a movie to watch. By the time I went to bed, Vinny had retrieved his clothes from the dryer downstairs and was out of my bathrobe. I put the robe in my hamper and told him he could keep the panties. I think he was pleased. At 9 in the morning, Lula, Connie, Vinny, and I all showed up at the office as if it existed. The fire trucks, EMTs, and police cars were gone, but sooty water still pooled in the gutter. 3 buildings were cordoned off with crime scene tape. The bookstore on one side of the bond's office and the dry cleaner on the other side showed no structural damage. They were smoke-smudged and waterlogged, but they were standing intact. The bond's office was a pile of charred rubble.
Ain't this a bitch, Lula said. My couch is gone. Where am I gonna sit?
The office can get rebuilt, Connie said, but we've lost years of files that we'll never be able to replace. Phone numbers, addresses, open bonds, they're all gone.
Good riddance, Vinny said. I was in debt up to my gonads. We can make a fresh start.
Yeah, Lula said. We can buy a new couch. We could get one that vibrates.
Reality check, I said. Burning down the office wasn't a friendly gesture. Remember the three men who wanted to kidnap Vinny but were willing to settle for me? They're still out there. They probably burned down the office.
Only two of them, Lula said. Larry got a bum knee.
My favorite nail polish was in my desk drawer, Connie said. I'm going to have to buy new nail polish.
This here's real sad, Lula said. I don't know where I'm supposed to go. Do I have a job?
I'll call the Wellington Company, Connie said. It's Saturday, but there might be someone working. I'm sure they'll just move the bonds business into a different location.
We all waited while Connie tapped the number in and listened for the connection.
It's not a working number, Connie said a minute later.
What's with that? Lula wanted to know.
It's the only number I have for them, Connie said. I don't have any cell numbers. Maybe we should go downtown and see if anyone's working. If I was Drager and one of my buildings burned down, I'd be at my desk this morning.
I'll drive, I said. I knew Drager wasn't going to be at his desk, but I didn't want to share that information and have to explain my break-in with Ranger. If I drove everyone downtown, they'd see for themselves. Not to mention, I had no idea what else to do. I felt like I was floating in space with no direction. Everyone packed into my SUV, and I took Hamilton to Broad.
You know what we should do? Lula said. We should open our own bail bonds agency. We could call it Big and Beautiful Bail Bonds.
You need startup money to do that, Vinny said. You need money to rent an office, security deposits, advance money for the lease. We'd have to buy computers and software, file cabinets, staplers.
We could get a loan, Lula said. Who's got credit?
Not me, I said. I'm a month behind on my rent. I can't get a loan to buy a new car.
Not me, Vinny said. I don't even have credit with my bookie.
Hell, Lula said. That's an understatement of the year. Your bookie wants to kill you.
I could go to my family, Connie said.
We all declined on that one. If we took money from Connie's family, we'd be owned by the mob.
What about you? Vinny asked Lula.
I'm in collection, Lula said. I overextended a little. I'm worried someone's going to come repossess my shoes.
The Megan building was a block away, and my stomach was in a knot. I stopped for a light, and it was obvious traffic was slow ahead. Only one lane was open. The other was barricaded. The light changed, and I crept up to the Megan building. Yellow crime scene tape blocked off the sidewalk. A fire truck and the fire marshal's SUV was parked nearby. There was a lot of charred debris on the sidewalk in front of the building, and four guys in hard hats stood talking. They were standing in the road looking up at the Megan building. The windows on the fifth floor were completely blown out. Black soot covered the exterior of the top floors, and the lower floors were grime-streaked.
What floor was the Wellington Company on? Lula asked.
The fifth floor, I told her.
Guess we know why they aren't answering their phone, Lula said.
Connie looked out her window.
Someone was really busy last night.
This is crazy, Vinny said. Even the mob knows enough not to blow up two businesses in one night. Who the heck's doing this?
I don't know, Lula said, but I need chicken. I need donuts. I need one of them extra greasy breakfast muffins with ham and eggs and shit.
Chapter 26. I stopped at three different drive-through windows, and by the time we got back to the office, we were all feeling sick, not just from the freakish turn our lives had taken, but also from the food we'd managed to snarf down en route.
I don't feel so good, Lula said. I think I must have got a bad egg. I need a Rolaid.
You know what I need? Vinny said. Lucille. I know this is stupid, but I miss Lucille. I never thought I'd say that. She was such a pain in the ass. How can you miss someone that's a pain in the ass?
My ex-husband was a pain in the ass, Connie said, and I don't miss him at all.
Ditto for me, I said. My marriage lasted about 15 minutes. I caught my ex-husband naked on my dining room table with Joyce Barnhart riding him like she was in the Kentucky Derby going for the win.
Your problem is you're a jerk, Lula said to Vinny. You got all normal feelings, like you love Lucille, but you can't help from being a jerk. I mean, what kind of a man has a romantic relationship with a duck?
I don't know, Vinny said. Seemed like a good idea at the time.
You see, Lula said, it's always a good idea at the time, but you don't connect the dots between the good idea and the bad ever after. You got no sense of consequences. I learned all about this in my deviant behavior class at the community college.
I didn't know you were going to college, Vinny said.
Of course you didn't, on account of you don't listen. You're not a listener like me. You'd be a better person if you were a listener.
I'd listen more if you talked less, Vinny said.
Huh, Lula said. Yo ass.
The crime scene tape had been stretched across wooden barricades placed close to what used to be the building housing the bonds office. The sidewalk was still passable, and there was still on-street parking. Lula's Firebird was at the curb, along with Connie's car and the Love Bus. Mooner and the Hobbits were on the sidewalk looking at the rubble. I parked in front of the Firebird and walked back to Mooner.
Dude, Mooner said, someone was smoking in bed.
Yeah, I said, not much left of the bonds office.
Too bad, Mooner said. I was gonna plug in. The Hobbits need computer juice.
I have to do my blog, one of the Hobbits said. I have to Twitter.
Bungo good child, an old Hobbit said. Where are your manners? Introduce us to this lovely creature.
Mooner pointed to the old Hobbit.
This is Old Buck of Buckland. He's like the oldest dude, but he's cool. The little guy standing next to him is Poppy Proudfoot. Then there's Freedock Broadbeam, that's like self-explanatory. Two-Foot of No Bottle, Faux Frodo, and Chica Ribbit.
That's a lot of hobbits, Lula said.
Tell me about it, Mooner said. It's like I need rubber walls on the old bus, and I can't bake brownies fast enough for these dudes. They sure love their brownies.
The hobbits were all dressed in a mix of shabby chic hobbit clothes and assorted footgear. Brown hooded capes, green or brown vests over tunics, pedal pusher type pants cinched in with a variety of belts from rope to lizard. Chica Ribbit was a girl hobbit, and her purse matched her pink Converse sneakers. Freedock Broadbeam was as wide as he was tall. Two-Foot of No Bottle was a tall, gangly guy with sandy blonde hair and a scraggly beard. And Poppy Proudfoot was the youngest. I'm guessing he was 17 or 18. How long are the hobbits going to be with you? I asked Mooner.
A week. HobbitCon starts today, but it doesn't really start to swing until Tuesday, when the High Holy One proclaims it officially in session.
I need to charge my phone, Poppy said. My mom's gonna freak if she can't call me.
Me too, Old Buck said. My wife will think I'm fooling around if I don't answer my phone.
You can plug in at my place, I said.
What the heck? I didn't have anything else to do.
Did you hear that? Mooner said to the hobbits. We have juice. Issa Lyra Thorny of Fairdowns is gonna let all you dudes plug in.
Three cheers for Issa Lyra, Broadbeam said.
Hobbit hooray, they all yelled. Hooray, hooray.
Let's do it again,
Poppy said. Not necessary, I told them. Get in the bus and follow me.
Boy, hobbits know how to have a good time, Luva said. Don't take much to make them happy.
I drove across town with the Love Bus on my tail. I parked in the lot to my building, and we all trooped into the elevator. Two-Foot, Poppy, Broadbeam, Old Buck, Faux Frodo, Chica Ribbit, Mooner, Vinny, and me.
There are a lot of hobbits in this elevator, Vinny said. Anybody know the weight limit?
Mooner pushed the button for the second floor, and the elevator creaked and shuddered and slowly rose.
We have liftoff, Mooner said.
Hobbit hooray, they all yelled. Hooray, hooray!
This could get old, Vinny said to me. They're just plugging in, right? Like an hour and they're gone?
I unlocked my door and the hobbits rushed in. They plugged their phones and their laptops into outlets all over the apartment. They used the bathroom, tested out the couch, turned the television on, cooed over Rex, looked in my refrigerator and cupboards. I found a relatively quiet corner and called Ranger.
What's all that noise? Ranger asked. It sounds like you're having a party.
It's hobbits, I said. They're using my electric.
I saw the Megan building this morning. There was a lot of damage. Will they have to raise the building?
I don't know. They're checking the structural integrity. The bonds office burned like it was made out of cardboard. 10 minutes after you left, the roof went down. Whoever set the fire must have used a decent amount of accelerant.
Do you think this is the end of it?
If Bludovich destroyed both businesses to cover his tracks, it'll end here. That would be the good business decision. If this has become a personal vendetta against Vinny, it's probably not over.
Hard to believe Vinny is that important to Bludovich. He doesn't even know Vinny.
From what I can tell, Bludovich is a power-hungry maniac. If he thinks Vinny is a threat, he'll take him down.
Where do we go from here?
I have men working on it. I'll get back to you in a couple hours.
I disconnected and went to the kitchen for a soda. Mooner was watching Rex. Everyone else was in front of the television, except Vinny. Where's Vinny? I asked Mooner.
Bathroom.
The buzzer rang on my front door, and Mooner answered. I looked out from the kitchen and saw two guys.
Vincent Plum?
The one guy asked.
No, dude, Mooner said. I'm like the Moon Man. I'm Bungo.
Cripes, the guy said.
He's stoned.
He's a right height. Brown hair, slim weasel body, the other guy said. Hit him!
I saw the guy's arm extend with the stun gun, and I ran for Mooner. I reached the door just as Mooner collapsed, and I got tagged, too. By the time my brain unscrambled, I was tied hands and feet and had duct tape across my mouth. I was rolling around on the floor of a van, bumping into Mooner, who was also bound and taped. It was a panel van with solid sides and two doors in the rear with small windows. The driver and his partner were up front. I didn't want to go there. I could mostly see sky through the windows. A streetlight flashed by. A tree. No way of knowing where we were going. The driver and his partner weren't talking. The van turned from a smooth road to a bumpy road, hooked a corner, and the road was smooth again. It came to a stop, and the rear doors opened. Mo and Eugene looked in at Mooner and me.
What the hell's this?
Mo asked. The driver came around.
What do you mean? It's Vincent Plum and some girl. She got in the way, so we took her too. She looks like fun.
That's not Vincent Plum, you moron.
How do you know? Have you ever seen Vincent Plum?
I saw him when he stuck his head out of his office. We followed him and the girl from the bonds office to the apartment. That's how we knew where to find them. We would have snatched him then, but Larry was whining and bleeding all over the place. Eugene joined the group and looked in at Mooner and me.
What the fuck's this?
Exactly, Mo said.
We took the wrong guy, the driver said.
No shit, Eugene said.
How was I to know? He's the right height. He's got brown hair. He's sort of weaselly.
Gregor's gonna be pissed, Eugene said. We already called and told him we had Vinny. He's coming out to personally cut off his nuts.
Call him and tell him we made a mistake, the driver said.
What are you, crazy? Eugene said. Remember what happened to Ziggy when he brought Gregor the wrong Dairy Queen blizzard?
Yeah, the driver said. Gregor hit him in the head with a hammer, and now Ziggy falls over when he takes a leak.
I got an idea, Eugene said. Why don't we douse the van with gasoline, set it on fire, and shove it off a cliff? Then we tell Gregor there was a faulty gas pedal, and the van went out of control and crashed, and we all just got out in time, except we couldn't rescue Vincent.
That might work, Mo said.
Wait a minute, the driver said. We don't have to get all that elaborate. Has Gregor ever seen Vincent Plum?
Not that I know, Eugene said.
Then what's the problem, the driver said. We tell him this is Vincent Plum. That way Gregor gets to cut someone's nuts off, and he won't be disappointed that he made the trip out here.
Yeah, but this guy will tell Gregor he's not Plum, Mo said.
The driver shrugged. We'll leave the tape on his mouth.
Gregor won't like that, Eugene said. He likes when people scream and beg.
So we wait until Gregor starts working on him, the driver said, and then we take the tape off when Mooner's in the screaming stage.
Everyone thought about that for a beat.
It could work, Mo said.
Eugene agreed.
Okay, so we have a plan, Eugene said. Let's haul these two into the house. We'll put them in the tower room. When Gregor gets here, we'll take this guy to the kitchen, because it has a tile floor for easy cleanup. And then we'll save the girl for ourselves for later.
Mooner said.
Don't worry about it, Eugene said to Mooner. It only hurts in the beginning, and then you faint.
I was dragged out of the van, and Mo put me over his shoulder like a bag of sand. This was the first chance I had to see the house and its surroundings. There was a large lawn surrounding the house. Beyond the lawn, there were dense trees, long paved driveway leading to the house. The house itself could hardly be called a house. It was a fortress. It was ominous gray stone and huge. It defied description. It had a tower with turrets like a medieval castle. If I had to imagine a house for a Bulgarian maniacal mobster, this would be it. Chapter 27. We were carried inside and up to the tower room. The bindings were cut away from our ankles but left on our wrists. The tape was ripped off our mouths.
Gregor won't be here for a while, Eugene said, so make yourself comfortable.
And he closed and locked the door.
I like my nuts, Mooner said. I don't want them cut off. I'd be like nutless then.
Don't worry, I said. We'll get rescued.
Do you think?
Sure. Truth is, I didn't have a lot of faith in a rescue. Time was too short. Ranger was good, but this would require a miracle. I looked around the tower room. Not a lot going on. Stone floor, circular stone walls, ringed by long, narrow windows without panes. Thick wood door that didn't give when I kicked it. I went to a window and looked out. The house was on a hill surrounded by woods. I could see the Delaware River in the distance. I was pretty sure I was in Pennsylvania. I paced the room for an hour, burning off nervous energy. Mooner was quiet, sitting on the floor, chanting softly.
Om Moon, he said, eyes closed. Om Moon.
Another hour went by, and I saw a car turn into the driveway. It was a big black Lincoln Town Car. It rolled to a stop in front of the house, and the driver got out. Large man, dark wiry hair streaked with gray. Couldn't see much of his face from where I stood in the tower. I suspected it was Gregor Bludovich. Mooner was still convening with his inner self. I didn't want to disturb him. I think he'd made peace with the fact he was going to lose his nuts, and I don't think it occurred to him that death would follow. After a couple minutes, there were loud voices on the stairs, accompanied by heavy footsteps. The tower door banged open, jolting Mooner out of his contemplative state, filling me with renewed fear. Eugene and Moe rushed in, and the man who arrived in the Lincoln labored up the stairs behind them.
We would have brought them down, Eugene said to the man.
Shut up, you idiot, the man said. I'm not an invalid. I'm a Bulgarian bull.
The Bulgarian bull lunged into the room, and I thought he looked like a bull having a stroke. His face was purple, and he was sweating and breathing heavy. He was close to 6 feet tall and weighed about 250 pounds. His eyes were dilated black and glittered in his feverish face. His jowls shook when he talked. He had small, square yellow teeth behind fleshy, protruding lips. He was dressed in bagged-out dark dress slacks and a white dress shirt, open at the neck, showing a mat of graying chest hair.
So,
he said, looking down at Mooner with his mean little pig eyes.
What have you got to say for yourself?
Dude, Mooner said.
The Bulgarian bull leaned over and got so close to Mooner their noses were touching.
Do you know who I am? He yelled at Mooner. I'm Gregor Blutovich. I'm the man you cheated.
And before Mooner could say anything, Blutovich hit him open-handed on the side of the head and knocked Mooner over.
That isn't Vinny, I said.
Eugene and Moe sucked in air and froze. Blutovich turned on me.
Who's this?
She was with him, Eugene said. We thought you'd like her.
They're lying, I said. They took the wrong man, and they were going to keep me for themselves.
Blutovich looked over at Eugene and Moe.
Is this true?
She's trying to make trouble, Eugene said.
Blutovich grunted.
I'll give her trouble.
He turned away and powered himself to the door.
I'm hungry, he said. I want something to eat, and then I'll deal with these two.
Blutovich led the way down the stairs, and Eugene and Moe stumbled after him, closing and locking the tower door. Mooner was still stretched out on the floor. A trickle of blood oozed from a split lip. Are you all right? I asked.
He's a scary dude, Mooner said.
I went back to the window, desperate to see Range Man in the driveway. I was counting down to the moment when Blutovich was done eating and the real horror would begin. I was staring so intently and wanting to see help so badly, I almost missed the movement in the woods to the right. There was no wind, but something was disturbing the undergrowth. Animal, I thought. And then more movement a few feet over. And next thing, the woods were alive with hobbits. They were everywhere, creeping forward out of the woods, onto the grass, inching up to the fortress. I ran around the room looking out all the windows, and everywhere I looked, I saw hobbits. There were hundreds of them. "Hobbits!" I yelled to Mooner. "Get up! There are hobbits out there!" Mooner got to his feet, and we looked out at the hobbits. They were up and running now, brandishing golf clubs, baseball bats, and tennis rackets. "Get the orcs," they were yelling, led by Vinny and Chica Ribbit. "Down with the evil orcs!" Vinny was back in his hobbit clothes, sprinting across the lawn, cape flying, pumping the air with his fist. Mooner yelled at them from the tower, "Go, hobbits!" The hobbits looked up at Mooner and cheered. "Hobbit ho!" they yelled, and they went into the house like hobbit SWAT. They hurled themselves through windows and doors. A cavalcade of black cars and one red Firebird raced up the driveway, and a chopper whirred overhead. Ranger was out of the first car. Morelli followed. They went in through the front door. Guys in FBI jackets poured out of the cars. Local police cars rolled in and parked on the grass. I heard footsteps on the stairs leading to the tower room, and Mooner and I pressed ourselves flat against the wall, praying it wasn't going to be Blutovich who came through the door. The door opened, and Chica Ribbit burst into the room. She went straight to Mooner and threw her arms around him and kissed him.
"I was so worried, Bungo, good child," she said.
Mooner grinned.
"No problemo," he said. "And I've still got my nuts."
Ranger was next through the door, followed by 20 or 30 hobbits who swirled around Mooner and looked out the windows and commented on the woods and how this would make a wonderful shire. Ranger cut the plastic cuffs off my hands.
"Are you okay?" he asked.
I nodded. "Yes. How did you find us so fast?"
"Vinny and the hobbits got to the parking lot just as the van was leaving with you and Mooner. Vinny had your purse, so they were able to follow the van in the Mercedes."
"What was Vinny doing with my purse?"
"He thought you'd have a gun in it, and you did have a gun. But turns out you had something even better. You had car keys and a cell phone."
"Vinny called you?"
"Yes, and I called Morelli, and he did his cop thing. Turned out it was easy to organize. The feds have been following Blutovich for months."
"Who called the hobbits?"
"The hobbits called the hobbits. They were uncontrollable. The fear was that they would rush the house before Blutovich got here, and the police wouldn't be able to charge him with anything."
Ranger grinned.
"The truth is, the hobbits saved the day. They caught Blutovich by surprise, and no one got hurt."
Lula and Connie came through the door.
"Heart attack," Lula said. "I'm having a heart attack. How the heck many stairs is that? Give me room. Give me air."
She spotted me and grabbed me and hugged me.
"Connie and me were so scared for you."
Connie joined in the hug.
"It's over," she said. "They got all the orcs."
"We were in communication with Vinny and the hobbits right from the beginning," Lula said, "so we know all about orcs."
"They're the enemies of hobbits," Connie said.
"I want to see Blutovich," I said to Ranger.
"Babe," Ranger said.
"Who's Blutovich?"
Connie wanted to know.
"He's the bad guy," I said. "He's the one who caused all the death and destruction."
"Count me in," Lula said. "I want to see him too."
We found Blutovich in the kitchen. He was cuffed, along with Mo, Eugene, the driver, and the other guy who helped with my abduction. Even in cuffs, Blutovich was frightening, exuding anger like a toxic gas.
"You,"
he said, fixing his crazy eyes on me. I didn't say anything to Blutovich. I didn't have to. I just wanted to see him in cuffs and know I was in the power seat. I felt good. Lula was behind me.
"What's with the bump on your forehead?" she asked Blutovich. "It's big as a baseball."
Blutovich glared at Lula and snarled.
"Cripes," Lula said to Blutovich. "What the heck's the matter with you? Where's your manners?"
"Some guy in a cape caught him an orc and hit him with a bottle," Eugene said. "We were sitting at the table eating sandwiches, and next thing all these hobbits invaded the house. And this one hobbit rushed at Gregor with a red beer bottle and hit him in the head. And then the hobbit kissed the bottle and said it was his precious. If I didn't know better, I'd swear the hobbit looked like Vincent Plum.
Morelli was on the other side of the room talking to three guys in FBI jackets. They all had pads out, taking notes. Morelli was talking to the FBI guys, but he was looking at me. Our eyes caught and held for a moment, and he smiled. I left the Greystone Fortress with Lula, Connie, and Vinny. You hit Blutovich with my lucky bottle, didn't you? I said to Vinny when Lula turned onto River Road.
Yeah, Vinny said. It was beautiful. We caught him all flat-footed. I saw Blutovich at the table, and it all came together for me. I saw him at Sunflower's house the day it burned down. I could have shot him. I had your gun, but I knew the cops were right behind us, so I smacked him in the face with the bottle.
So it was a lucky bottle after all, Lula said.
It's not a lucky bottle, Vinny said. It's Lucky's bottle. I talked to my mom this morning, and she said it was no secret about the bottle. Lucky was Pip's guinea pig. Lucky's ashes are in the bottle. Pip left it to Stephanie because she has a hamster. I guess he figured there was a rodent connection.
I turned and stared at Vinny. All this time I've been carrying guinea pig ashes around?
Yeah, Vinny said. Isn't that a kicker?
I don't mean to change the subject, Lula said, but we don't got no bonds agency. What are we supposed to do every day?
And I don't have Lucille, Vinny said.
I bet I could help with that, Lula said. Maureen Brown and me are still friends. Suppose I get her to talk to Harry and tell him how it was all a misunderstanding and she wasn't actually doing the dirty with you. Like, we could say her brother needed bonding out and you were advising her.
Do you think Harry will believe that? Vinny asked.
As a student of human nature, I learn that people believe what they want to believe, Lula said. Anyways, if we can get you and Lucille together and Harry don't want to kill you no more, maybe we can get him back into the bail bonds business. And if that happens, I want a couch that vibrates.
You got it, Vinny said.
Connie's car was parked at the demolished bonds office. Lula dropped her first. Vinny and I were next. Lula dropped us in my parking lot. Mooner and Chica Ribbit and a bunch more hobbits were right behind us in my Mercedes.
Hey, dudes,
Mooner said to Vinny and me.
Party tonight in the love bus.
We both passed, and Mooner transferred the hobbits to the RV and drove off.
If I could borrow the Mercedes, I'd go to try to talk to Lucille, Vinny said. Maybe she's calmed down. Maybe she misses me, too.
I gave him the key. Good luck. I let myself into my apartment and listened to the quiet. No hobbits, no Vinny, just Rex and the soft whir of his wheel going round. I took Lucky's bottle out of my purse and set it on the counter next to Rex's cage. I made a peanut butter sandwich and washed it down with my last beer. I was still in the kitchen when Ranger called.
Just checking in to make sure you're at home and safe, he said.
I'm fine, I told him. How about you?
I'm good. We went through Blutovich's house and found enough drugs and stolen property to put him away for a long time, and the feds confiscated his files and computer. I'm sure they'll find more evidence against him, and his crew will talk. Those guys aren't heroes, and they don't like Blutovich. I'm going out of the country for a few weeks. Tank will watch out for you, and I'll be on my cell phone. I'll be in touch when I get back. You owe me.
And he disconnected. I took a shower and was about to dry my hair when my doorbell buzzed. I wrapped myself in a bath towel, went to the door, and looked out the security peephole at Morelli. What? I asked, holding the door partially open.
Can I come in?
I'm not dressed. Morelli stepped into my apartment and closed and locked the door behind him.
That's perfect, he said, because I have something for you to wear.
And he dangled a lacy pink thong from his finger.
I stopped at the mall on the way home just now. I thought you'd look pretty in this.
We hope you've enjoyed Sizzling 16, a Macmillan audio production from St. Martin's Press. Text copyright 2010 by Ivanovich Inc. Production copyright 2010 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.